This Arab Spring, we watched repressive regimes shut down dissent by turning off the internet. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has shut down or attacked cell phone towers in order to carry out operations without fear of being reported. So how to end run such communication blackouts? Liberate the technology. That's the loose name of a movement that includes stealth wireless networks like the internet in a suitcase that can be carried across a border, or cell phones buried in dirt for dissidents to dig up and use later. It's a worldwide movement led by young, internet-savvy people and funded in part by the U.S. James Glanz of the New York Times has been investigating this. And James, start with that internet in a suitcase. As you write, workers who look like they should be in a garage band, instead in an office in Washington, what are they working on?
Well, just what you said, little package you could carry across the border, open up, and have an internet connection that would connect a group of people, let's say dissidents, without going through the centralized hub, which is usually controlled by the government, of course.
Is this the mesh network technology you write about?
Yeah, that's the technical name. And what it means is that cell phones are essentially both phones and little mini cell towers, so they're able to transmit signals without going to the little towers on top of the building, wherever we usually use. It cuts out the government.
Is this sort of like the bump app on an iPhone, where you can just touch two phones or iPads together and a picture will hop across?
Someone actually mentioned the bump app to me. That's the idea. Except this is the bump app writ large, you might say, because you're sort of automatically passing it among a trusted network of phones. And they don't have to bump each other either.
Right. But can they then use tools like Facebook and Twitter?
Yes. The way that that works is you still need, so when you set, you take it out of the suitcase, let's say, you set it up, you're all talking to each other, and now you've got to find one connection that you trust to the global internet. In order to get to Facebook. And you can do that in a variety of ways. Some people may have, you know, companies, for example, may have their own fiber optic going across the border, and sometimes they make those available. But if you don't have anything like that, the deluxe version, I'm told, of the suitcase may have a little satellite connection. So that will get you out to the outside world.
Well, and let's take a look at what's happening with cell phones in Afghanistan. The Pentagon and the State Department have begun setting up a shadow cell phone network to get around the idea that the Taliban are attacking the cell phone towers that are outside the bases. These are cell towers that they're setting up on U.S. bases, but what else is different about them?
The thing that surprised us about this Afghanistan part of the story is that it's true, as you say, that Taliban attacks towers, but it turns out that that's not the only way they control things. They basically call the phone company and say, you're going to shut down from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. each day, let's say, if that's what we want, and it's going to be on a regular schedule. If you don't do that, then we'll destroy all the towers we can get to, and we may even go after you and your family. So it happens. So the command and control, I think, is the crucial thing here. It's going to be controlled by U.S. personnel.
Right. Again, just to get around that problem. You write about other technology, an Iranian expat who says most people inside Iran who visit his site use Bluetooth technology. Here in the U.S., we use that mainly for wireless headsets, you know, or to, you know, talk on our cell phones through a headset. They're accessing the internet with it. The State Department meeting with people who fled North Korea and are now dissidents, who are burying cell phones in the hills in China near the North Korean border so that others can dig them up and use them?
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the cloak and dagger little discoveries we made. They just go, and it's a very low-tech kind of thing, but in a place like that, such a repressive regime, it's a revelation all on its own, because once they dig up the phones and cross over into North Korea, and you're still getting reception from some of the Chinese cell phone towers.
So, James Glanz, how much is the U.S., the State Department, the Pentagon, how much is being spent on this from the U.S., and how are they getting around this idea that they're working to undermine other governments?
You know, none of the programs we actually stumbled on was, as far as we know, officially classified, but it's still a very sort of secretive world, and the amount of money is hard to completely suss out. I mean, the State Department will have spent about $70 million on this kind of thing and related technologies by the end of this year. And then the project in Afghanistan, we found officials telling us that it ranged from $50 to $250 million. We weren't able to pin it down more closely than that. But the way the State Department phrases it is that this is a way to promote free speech among people who want it around the world for whatever purpose they're interested in. And they sort of get around the idea that it seems clear to many outsiders that, in fact, it's a way to put pressure on repressive regimes. They're not willing to go there. So in their own minds, it's really just about enabling communication among the citizenry of the world.
Do they perhaps open themselves up to another question? I hear the U.S. is helping people spread information in other countries and yet work to shut down WikiLeaks.
Well, we didn't really deal with that in this piece, but we got a couple letters from readers who pointed out that that seems to be a bit of a contradiction. I haven't really thought deeply about it, but I know that the question has been raised, and I think eventually the U.S. will have to face up to that bigger question.
In some ways, James, as you point out, it's the old-fashioned Voice of America writ really large. You know, it's the same kind of idea. But another way, it's just really remarkable what people are doing. I mean, a lot of these people have long studied technology. A lot are just, you know, sitting in a back room putting together wires and seeing what works.
No, that's right. I mean, you know, one of the kids we quoted in the piece is a 25-year-old from North Dakota who just decided he studied, I think, political science and then computer science, and then kind of put them together and became what they call liberation technologists, you know, and they're doing great things.
And as we've been saying, the U.S. pumping a lot of money into it, but it seems to more underscore the resourcefulness of the dissidents who sort of started all this.
Well, that's the thing. Most of these countries, you know, what's sad about their dissident movements is that the people who leave are so smart, you know. And that I talk to people, you know, from Cuba, from Iran, people who deal at least with the North Koreans, and the list goes on, and they're just really smart people and really usually very educated people. And, I wouldn't want to be on the other side of the border with those folks looking back at me, I'll tell you that.
James Glanz, who writes about the so-called liberation technology movement in the New York Times. James, thanks as always.
Pleasure.